Welcome in to First Things First. I'm Sarah Kustak, along with Chris Broussard, Doug Gottlieb. We're filling in for Nick, Chris, and Jenna. Good morning, guys. How are we doing?
How are you?
Good.
I'm great.
How good night's sleep?
So-so. Yeah.
Okay.
We hope you all had a good night's
sleep. We'll make it work.
We're going to start with LeBron James. He suffered the first major injury in his career this season, straining his groin, which sidelined him for 18 games. Since that injury, the Lakers went from fourth in the West to 10th. And now, according to reports, the team is concerned that it could keep him from leading them to the playoffs. Chris, how worried should LeBron and the Lakers be about missing the postseason?
Well, sir, the first concern is his health, because if he's not healthy, they've got 25 games left. If he misses maybe even five just because of the slight margin for error, that could be the difference. We're only having this conversation because LeBron has been hurt. They were the fourth seed in the West. They're 22-17 with him and 6-12 without him. So if he's healthy, and I know they're concerned about his groin, and they should, because he hasn't looked like LeBron James. He's put up nice numbers, but he hasn't been as explosive for as long of a period as he typically has been. So it doesn't look like he's back 100%. So I understand why they're concerned about the groin, because that's what their playoff hopes hinge on.
Well, obviously, it hinges on him being healthy. Right. I think they need Lonzo Ball back healthy. Yeah. Remember, a couple of those games, Kyle Kuzma missed as well. But when somebody says we're concerned about an injury that you had sustained that you felt like you're back from and you might have lost a bit of your explosiveness, I actually think it's more troubling if you're a Laker fan or if you're a Laker executive that maybe he just doesn't have that explosiveness, right? Like, you'd think 18 games, and I know groins are tricky. It's just like a pulled hamstring, right, where you think you're back, and then all of a sudden you run, and it feels like you get shot in the back of the leg. Once you get into your 30s, that happens to all of us, because we're all former athletes here. But when the Lakers are starting to say, well, he's not as explosive as we remember him, or maybe he should be, maybe it's because LeBron James, this is LeBron James 2.3.0, in that he's a better shot maker, he can start to win more with his mind than he can with his body. But that ability to just explode past inferior players might be gone, because he's had plenty of time to rehab, where you would think he would have that burst when he came back. And he does look different. He does look slower. He does look more like a below-the-rim player.
How much factors into, though, because he came back, what, five games? He's averaging a triple-double still. How much is just getting into game condition? I mean, how much is it? Are we not putting enough importance on the fact that he needs to get back into game shape?
Well, yeah, because I think it's premature after five games to say he's not the same. Now, if people want to look at what he did before the injury and say, yeah, he was playing really well, but was that typical LeBron that we're used to, if they want to argue that, that's a different thing. But to pick on these five games and say this is evidence that he's not the same, that would be premature. So, yeah, he has to get back in rhythm with his teammates. As we talked about yesterday, Doug, they have to adjust to him. And Doug's right, they've been injured. Lonzo Ball's injury, we know he struggles offensively, but on the defensive end, he is huge for them.
Yes.
Like, their rankings, they're a top 10 defensive team him.
Top seven across the board in every defense.
When he's in there, right?
When they were all healthy.
Right.
They were an excellent defensive team. And part of it is LeBron is not the defensive player he used to be.
Right.
Rondo, it's more reputation now.
Not to mention, Rondo missed 34 games.
Rondo missed games as well, but I'm saying in terms of defense and how important he is. And Kyle Kuzma has been a swinging gate at times defensively as well. So, yes, we're sitting here going like, man, they really could use Lonzo Ball, and people look at the shooting numbers. You have to explain why he is important to what they do.
Their defense without him, quickly, their defensive rating without him is 118. To put that in perspective, Cleveland has the worst defense in the league. That's 114 is their rating. So they're playing far worse than the worst defensive team in the league when Lonzo Ball's not there.
And part of that is LeBron James is different than he used to be, because he used to be the magic elixir for everything on offense and on defense,
right,
and it's just not the same. Look, this is all par for the course when you're in your 30s.
And your 16th season.
Yes, but he played 82 games last year. And maybe he managed it because he didn't practice last year. And so he's like, well, if I don't practice but I do play in games, it's the same number.
But he coasted last year, too, at times. I mean, they were
well until
we
came out of the All-Star break.
Right.
That's when he came back.
And he's had breaks. I've heard Nick point out before that he's taken, you know, mental breaks before and missed games before. But once you get into your 30s now, the injuries happen more often and they last longer. And when you come back, it takes you longer to come back for them. So this is what you're going to get, not just for the remainder of this year, but the likelihood is it doesn't get better. It gets worse.
Well, as you said, that's what could be scary for Laker fans. Look at the guys that came in with him. Dwayne Wade, about to retire. Carmelo Anthony, nobody wants him. Chris Bosh, retired. You know, Kobe Bryant, his 16th year was the last year he made the playoffs. Now, he played, what, 3 or 4 more years, but never was in the playoffs. And that's when he had that Achilles injury, was right at the end of his 16th year. And then he kind of battled with injuries the rest of his career. So, this, look,
here's a number that Dusty gave me, which is great. You know, before he got hurt, 29% of his shots were from three. Since he's been hurt, it's only been 5 games back, small sample size, but 41% of his shots from three. Just settling instead of playing that downhill bully ball, I'm bigger, stronger, more athletic than you are. And it's obvious when you watch, like, man, something's missing. I just view it as it's the opposite of a compliment when somebody goes, well, maybe you're still hurt. Like, no, he's actually fine. This is just what LeBron looks like
now. Well, the good news is that he's so smart.
Yes.
He can adjust if he's willing. Because he talked about playing off the ball more this year and just hasn't. His instinct is to go get the ball. So his instincts may not let him change his game, but he's smart enough and has the skills enough where he could change his game, be more cerebral, and be just as effective.
I think he and the rest of this roster and everyone that was on the trading block was waiting just to get to this All-Star break to reset, recharge. But with that being said, 25 games remain.
But what about Atlanta? The Atlanta one, just like, I agree with you, but how do you throw out a stinker against Atlanta?
Quarter. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's a game, if you are going to make the playoffs, that you need to win. So if the Lakers do, in fact, miss out on the postseason, how much of a failure would that be, or a hit to LeBron James' legacy, given these circumstances?
I think it's a disaster. I think it's an absolute disaster. And I understand, like, I've seen it. I mean, you're trying to contextualize to people who are in the East Coast, who don't stay up late, right? America has turned off their TV sets because I just can't stay up late to watch LeBron on the West Coast. That's why the ratings are so down. But you had him as the MVP, and it was
yeah, that's not happening.
Listen, no. It was trending in that direction. They were trending in the direction of making Chris Broussard look like Karnak. But it would be to go all in and to get LeBron James and to be left with, you're at the mercy of the Pelicans to make a trade, or hopeful that you can get a free agent, and to not make the playoffs with LeBron James after making 8 straight finals in Miami and Cleveland. And I know the West is not as good as it's been. Like, I would be an abject disaster.
And that's what people aren't realizing. Look, it's better than the East. It's deeper than the East. But it's not what it was a few years ago. No. You have one elite team. That's it. Everybody else is very close. It'd be a huge failure, but I think how it happens is important. He's missed 18 games. They played well with him. If he gets hurt again and they miss it, it's going to be hard to put it on LeBron James when they played well with him. I think Lakers fans need to keep in context this season was an experiment. What comes in the summer? That's key.
Who would have thought we would have been saying that the Clippers and Kings are the two teams that the Lakers and LeBron are chasing? Yeah.
If we could just beat the Clippers.
Do you think they will make? I know the Clippers said, what would it mean? Do you think they can? Do you think that they will make it?
I do. I think this is a good basketball team when they're healthy, and I think they're going to get healthy at just the right moment. I also think that after the Rockets game, you got 3 games: 2 against the Pelicans, 1 against the Mavericks. Right. Those are teams that are better off losing than they are winning. You want to call it tanking or playing your young players or whatever. We still don't know what if Anthony Davis is going to suit up for the Pelicans. So I would say if they don't win all 3 of those games and then they get a game with the Suns, like 2 games after that, then you can start to hit the panic button, because it's really only the Kings that you're trying to leapfrog.
And you're playing the Kings and you're playing the Clippers twice.
Right. So. Yeah, and they should have beaten the Kings if not for Kadarius Caldwell-Pope. Right.
They're only 2 games out in the loss column. And as you said, you mentioned the Lakers schedule. They could be tied with these teams or ahead of them come March. Because Sacramento schedule, you got Golden State, Oklahoma City, Minnesota, and Milwaukee. That's their next 4 games. They could lose 3 of those or all 4 of those. The Clippers are 8-11 in their last month of basketball. They just traded their leading scorer, Tobias Harris, another starter, Avery Bradley. So I think both of those teams are coming back to the pack, and the Lakers should, you're right. If they lose to these bad teams that they have on their schedule, then maybe they're not going to make it. But they could be in the playoffs within 2 weeks.
Yeah. You slowed down in your 30s? Huh? We didn't slow down in our
30s. I did not slow down in my 30s. I'm just saying. Most normal human beings slow down in their 30s.
Coming up, are the Giants trying to trade Odell Beckham Jr.? That's next on FS1. And you can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Nick Wright. No one should feel unsafe at home. Period. Fear has no place in a place like home. That's been Simply Safe's mission from day one. We cut out the middleman so you get award-winning protection at fair and honest prices. Simply Safe blankets your entire home with protection. Around-the-clock professional monitoring. Make sure police are on the way when you need them. Alarms that cry wolf? No thanks. Simply Safe's precision-engineered motion sensors detect the unique heat signature of humans, not pets. Simply Safe's glass break sensors are so precise, they can tell the difference between an intruder smashing a window and a plate breaking. The security sensors are so tiny, they blend in with your home so you won't notice them. This is security that is out of sight, but continues to give you a peaceful mind knowing you're protected. As more than 3 million Simply Safe customers already know, it feels good to fear less. So protect your home today. You'll get free shipping on any system order. Just visit simplysafe.com/FTF. That's simplysafe.com/FTF. To protect your home and family today, simplysafe.com/FTF.
We'll get to Odell Beckham in a second, but first, college basketball, Wisconsin, Illinois. Khalil Iverson runs the floor. Nice putback.
Like another Iverson on that one. Is that going too far?
It's a little too far.
Yeah.
A little different body size.
A little bit.
Good win. Illini.
They turned around.
And Brad Underwood nearly had a huge win for him.
Next, Virginia Tech. Ahmed Hill steps in front of the pass, goes coast to coast, dunk at the other end, shooting the gaps.
We're not showing Virginia winning. We're showing Virginia Tech dunking.
Okay.
We're showing highlights.
I'm okay with it. Virginia can be so boring, I'd rather watch the other team dunk.
And finally, from All-Star Weekend, Jay Clark, the jumper. This is an acrobatic dunk. Wow. What's happening? Ooh, nice. He should have been in the dunk contest.
Nice.
You actually have to be able to play basketball to be in the NBA dunk contest.
Moving on.
There's hair in this mug.
Well, the best dunkers are in the NBA. You know that.
Odell Beckham. Reports are that the Giants were aggressively shopping him last offseason. That was until the Patriots came calling, and then they pulled their star wideout off the market. Remember, the Giants signed Odell to a 5-year extension last summer. Doug, should the Giants still look to deal Odell?
I love this story. This is like one of my favorite stories of all time. Like, man, let's see what the market can have. And all of a sudden you get a call from Bill Belichick. Like, so you're thinking about dumping Odell Beckham Jr.? Like, no, who told you that? We love Odell Beckham Jr. Like, dude, Belichick called. We're missing something. you're missing something. This is a disastrous story for the New York Giants. I mean, they give him a contract after 3 months of good behavior, and then the second the contract is signed, he goes back to being the exact same guy he was, only now empowered by this huge contract that you want to get rid of him. The steps of errors from taking Saquon Barkley instead of getting your future quarterback to signing Odell Beckham Jr. when you didn't have to. You could have let him play out the season and see if he was really a changed man, to the fact that now they're still kind of stuck in what do we do quarterback-wise? What do we do with OBJ? And then this story comes out that you legitimately wanted to move him. And then I hear Jake Glazer in his mailbag make a bold prediction.
That's what started this whole thing.
Makes a bold prediction that he'll be moved. And as we know, like, Jay Glazer, when he talks, like E.F. Hutton, people listen. Right. So I think this looks like a clown show in New York that, wait, you were going to trade him, but because Belichick was interested, you didn't want to? That's because that system, that program is run the way it's supposed to be run, where you get in line. If not, you're gone. That's it. Period. End of story. He never would have gotten that big contract from the Patriots. He's incredibly talented, but it's hard to win with him because of all the other stuff he brings with him.
But here's the thing. What has he done? You said it's back to the old Odell. We know that he had the interview with Lil Wayne early in the season. which, okay, you know, everybody knows Eli is a problem. That's their biggest problem. You said it. They should have drafted a quarterback. Eli's 38. He's not the same. He's not able to utilize Odell. Outside of that, now maybe Jay knows that there's stuff going on in the locker room.
Onside kick. He was on the hands team. Chance to win a game, and he did the business decision and got out of the way. I mean, that's what this is about. You can't
at that point.
Make,
it was a smart thing to do. For
no,
that
it's
team.
Not
for that team.
No, it's not.
Where's that team going?
They weren't trying.
Okay, you're gonna put that play over all the great things he did this season.
Yes,
he threw two touchdown passes. That's not even to mention how great he was as a receiver.
He doesn't get paid to throw touchdown passes.
Well, then don't have him throw the ball.
Okay,
when he throws it, he threw it well. All I'm saying is he doesn't get paid to be on the onside kick team.
Yes, he does.
He gets paid to be a receiver. That's the one problem you have with him, that he made a business decision in a year where we have no chance to make the playoffs?
No, wait.
He should have made a business decision.
No, he should not have.
He should have.
Okay, let's.
Would it be better to get hurt in a season where your season's lost and maybe you're hurt for the upcoming season?
What's the best thing about Odell Beckham Jr.?
His talent, ability.
What specific talent does he have that we are all in awe of, that we watch pregame?
Hands, he's a great receiver.
You have an onside kick, dude. This is a team football game, and you're on the hands team, and the ball's coming your way.
That's your one thing. That's him returning to the old Odell.
It embodies the problem with Odell Beckham Jr. is that Odell Beckham Jr. is about Odell Beckham Jr.
Many receivers are.
Huh?
Why did New England want him then?
Because he's super talented, and they're dumpster divers. The same reason they always are. And who knows if they wanted him or they just want to make a call. Let's see.
Position. They would be terrible wide receivers.
And they won a Super Bowl without anybody good outside the numbers.
I get it, but he would be tremendous.
Of course
there.
He would.
My point is, I'm not saying he's perfect, but if last season he really wasn't, he's not the problem. If they get a quarterback, if they draft Dwayne Haskins and he's good,
yes,
they've got Evan Ingram at tight end, Odell Beckham Jr. at receiver, Saquon Barkley at running back. I agree with you. I think that was a mistake, but he's still great. If you have those three and a good quarterback, you'd be hard-pressed to find another team with a better trio of skill positions than those guys.
I understand, but we've seen this from the Pittsburgh Steelers. When you have great skill position guys, you don't have necessarily a football team. Remember, they shut him down. They shut him down at the end of the season. He hasn't played every year.
What do you think the Giants should do? Do you think they should be looking to move him?
I would love to move him. The problem is now you're going to take a major cap hit, right? Now, because you signed this deal. He's a freak talent, okay? He is an absolute freak talent. He's special. But they got better the less they went to him last year. They just did. And they started to win football games.
With or with going to him or not.
I understand, but they started to win football games the less they looked for him. And I'm not disputing that they have an Eli problem. That's their number one problem that they have. And that they can't, for whatever reason, they just can't quit Eli Manning. They can't move on there because they're the first family in football. And they have to fix the offensive line. They have to fix the defense. But look, football is there's no better embodiment for the team game than watching the New England Patriots with the guys you can't even name their wide receivers, right? Like Julian Edelman's their slot wide receiver. Outside the numbers, you're going with Philip Dorsett or Chris Hogan. Neither strike fear into your heart. But you can win football games. Why? Because they do their job. And when you're on the hands team and everybody shows up to watch you catch balls before the game and you have the greatest catch in football, even though Julio Jones' Super Bowl catch before the collapse was actually a better catch. Nonetheless, if you're known as having the best hands in the NFL, then when you're on the hands team and a ball is coming your way and you've got guys in front of you that are designed to block the other team, you go get the ball. He's about himself, not about winning. And if the Giants want to win, they should get rid of Odell Beckham Jr.
No, they should not trade him. You don't blame losing on a wide receiver. Okay, Julio Jones, is he great? Did they make the playoffs? No. Adam Thielen, Stephon Diggs, are they great? Yes. Did they make the playoffs? No. Receivers make the playoffs when you either have a great quarterback with you or the team around you is great. They're an accessory. And if you get a great quarterback, Odell Beckham will be great for you. I just don't think they should trade him. And I don't think he was that bad of a problem last year. Again, the Lil Wayne interview, I think people probably made too much out of that. We know, should you go on there at national TV and say that about your quarterback? Okay, no. But compared to what a lot of receivers are doing?
Name them.
Antonio Brown.
And that's why he's going to be gone.
Well, we'll see. Well, listen, the owner wants to meet with him. Listen. I think the owner would like to keep him.
Well, that's because of the cap hit. If it wasn't going to be a $20 million cap hit, he'd be gone yesterday.
There are a lot of receivers historically to date. Randy Moss was a problem. Randy Moss had an attitude.
When he was on bad teams, he was a bad team.
Do you think Odell would be different with a different organization or in a different culture?
Yes, absolutely, because he wouldn't be – look, what we know a quarter – of what really goes on.
Well, that's why, look, like you said, Jay Glazer's as plugged in as they get, and maybe there's stuff going on inside that organization that we don't know about, which will lead them to trade him. I'm just saying, from what we know, what we saw last season, I would not trade
him. Well, and remember, Dave Gettleman has a history of this. You go back to when he's in Carolina, he had Steve Smith, right, who's as talented a wide receiver and as competitive a guy as possible. They get rid of Steve Smith, they go to a Super Bowl. So there's precedent for this, even with their general manager. But that's really my point, is like, look, we know a fraction of it. We can only see the snippets we see on Sunday and then when they're on local radio or they're conducting interviews. If they have him under this new contract and you have Saquon Barkley, you got Evan Ingram, and you got Sterling Shepard, the thought should be all we need is a quarterback and fix some other things. But when they're talking about moving on from Odell Beckham Jr., it tells you all you need to know. He's a pain in the ass that keeps you from winning and doesn't help you
win. I mean, Jay made a bold prediction. Like I said, I don't know if that was based on his reporting or if he just wanted to make a bold prediction.
But
he's plugged in. I'm not questioning Jay Glazer.
I'm not either.
I'm just saying, there haven't been other reports that the Giants are looking to move him. I mean, since, you know, before the season.
Yeah, true. Okay, but Schefter thought he'd be moved last offseason, and now you got Jay Glazer. And, like, Jay Glazer, I'm not saying he bats 1,000, but it feels that way. It really feels like Jay Glazer's close to 1,000.
All right. We're moving on from Odell for the moment. Coming up, could KD and Kyrie already be planning to join forces? That's next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, and we are going viral. Anthony Davis said all 29 teams are on his list this offseason as he wants a trade. If you are looking for the best way to win him over, make a custom pancake that looks just like his face. What do you think? Wow, that's really good.
That's incredible.
Those look good. Who is it?
Antonio Brown.
Yeah. Antonio Brown got a full fur coat. Bold. Strong.
Incredible.
They got a little
fur coat?
Butter and syrup on it? No, I don't. I have coats that have a little fur around the collar. Fake fur, faux fur, but no real fur.
I'm not mad. I'm impressed. No, I did not. I just want to make sure.
I've got it off.
You had to double check?
That have fur?
You could pull it.
Real fur?
Three full fur coats.
You could pull that off, CB.
If you believe that.
Time for some stories to start your morning. Lincoln Riley had high praise for his former quarterback, saying Kyler Murray has kind of a Barry Sanders effect. Doug, is this fair praise?
Actually, look, I'm an Oklahoma State guy. You don't, like, normally you're like, keep Barry Sanders' name out of your mouth. On the other hand, there are some similarities there now. Now, Barry Sanders was only a starter for 1 year at Oklahoma State. He's a backup to the Terminator, Thurman Thomas, right? So how about that backfield? Right. It's an expensive backfield back in the day. Anyway, he has. The best parallel I've heard is Doug Flutie with Mike Vick's athleticism. That's probably more who I think of him as, but he is that type of explosive. He does make people miss. Baker Mayfield told me at the Super Bowl on a radio show that he thinks he'll run a 4.2 40. So I can't wait.
4.2.
And he said yesterday, last time I ran a 40, I ran a 4.3, and I think I'm faster than I was back then.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't think it's a crazy – he's not – he doesn't make you put you on skates like Barry Sanders does, but he is that kind
of
explosive.
Not a running back. I mean, but what Lincoln Murray meant was he's elusive. He can avoid the big shot, which will help him as a quarterback because obviously he's not going to run as much as a Barry Sanders or a running back. But when he does run and he doesn't slide, when he maybe needs to get that extra yard, if he can brace himself, move his body at a certain angle, and avoid the really clean shot, that'll help him well, especially at his size.
I will warn you, when you get to the NFL, you don't get faster. Everybody else does.
You can see it with Lamar Jackson.
Yes, yeah. Yes. He ran away from everybody in college.
To the NFL, Matt LaFleur has a big task ahead of him, bonding with quarterback Aaron Rodgers. The Packers coach reportedly plans to hit Rodgers from all angles this offseason. Chris, how much pressure is on Aaron Rodgers after a tumultuous 2018?
He didn't have a great year, so he's missed the playoffs the last 2 years. We know he was injured, of course, but you look at his numbers. Everybody talked about Tom Brady's numbers going down. His numbers were a tad bit better, depending on how you look at him, than Aaron Rodgers. So I do think there's some pressure on Aaron. He's starting to get some criticism, which he's never really gotten in the past. Why aren't you winning more? Are you really the best guy we've ever seen throw the football? I think with Matt LaFleur, clearly Rodgers was bothered by a lot of the play calling and the game planning under Mike McCarthy. So if Matt LaFleur can really impress him and wow him with some of his schemes and some of his game plans and things like that, formations, then I think Aaron will buy in if LaFleur can do that.
Oh, I think Aaron Rodgers is going to be forced to buy in. This is kind of his legacy is at stake. How do you want – now you have the biggest contract we've ever seen. How do you want to play? I think he's motivated. The best thing I heard from Matt LaFleur is Aaron Rodgers wants to be coached. That's the big challenge for guys at this level. Do you want to be coached? Do you want to learn from somebody, work with somebody who comes in with a different perspective? I think he wants to be challenged. I'm excited to see what Aaron Rodgers has to do because – think about how the season started. The big deficit to the Bears coming back from injury, comes back in the second half and wins. Oh, but after that, they collapsed.
You were expecting a huge year. He was my MVP pick for the NFL, too.
Speaking of coach-player relationships, back to the Lakers. Much has been made of the relationship between Luke Walton and LeBron James. Amid reports, James's associates haven't been happy with Walton as the head coach. But Luke told TMZ, quote, LeBron and I get along just fine. Chris, do you believe?
Well, there you go.
TMZ gets all the facts.
Well, first of all, of course, what's Luke going to say when TMZ corners him? However, I do think face-to-face, man-to-man, they're fine. LeBron does it in Cleveland, in Miami, here with the Lakers. You know, he's moody sometimes. He may have bad body language, but he doesn't do the dirty work. Like, what are the reports? His associates, that's – you find out as an organization what LeBron thinks by talking to his associates. And that's how the word gets out. It's not like LeBron was sitting down with David Griffin in Cleveland coming up with trade scenarios. Let's go after this guy. Or, you know, obviously he'll have maybe a different relationship with Magic to some degree. But I believe, Luke, I'm sure when he and LeBron interact, that it's good.
I would agree with you, and based upon the people I know, they say the exact same thing, that LeBron tries to do what Luke wants. You know, he doesn't – the previous reports of him blowing off play calls. Like, no, if he sees something, he does it. If not, he does what the coach wants. But I do think that the point you made is a good one, and the more we've seen LeBron operate, with the exception of when he bumped shoulder to shoulder with Eric Spoelstra in the first year, for the most
Wasn't
part...
Wasn't that an accident?
Yeah. It was also an accident when he just happened to mention to Pat Riley, hey, you ever think about coming back and coaching, right? And then Pat Riley kind of stood up to him quietly and said, no.
That's what you need.
But that's not what this organization has done. And I think it's fascinating. Look, Michael Jordan pressed a lot of buttons. He did not like management. He did not like the trades they made. He lost it when they traded Charles.
He didn't like the triangle at first.
They didn't like the triangle. He didn't like Charles Oakley. You're not trading away Charles Oakley, my protector for medical Bill Cartwright. Didn't like that. But he did not fracture the team in the way that LeBron has fractured this team, where they believed before injury that he was all in on them and they were all in on LeBron, that they were going to work kind of together to ultimately add a free agent. And then once the leak started that you had the one where his associates told you he could play if it's the playoffs, like, wait, he's not playing, he's not working out around us, the workout times kind of changed, that all of a sudden they started to think, wait, forget our interaction. Whatever he does behind the scenes is how he really feels, and there's a lack of trust there. And that's going to have to be earned, I think, by the young guys. He's going to have to earn some of their trust as a teammate and a friend in order to get them past this finish line and get them to the playoffs.
LeBron can get down if he doesn't think he has enough help. You know, it wasn't like that initially. When he was in Cleveland his first go-round, he was all in on that team. We know they didn't have great players around him, but they won 66, they won 61, and he sees we get bounced in the second or the third round of the playoffs. Then he starts getting superstars and winning championships. And so now he believes that I know what it takes to win a title, and if he doesn't think he has it, he can sulk. And that, I think when he was sitting there watching them play and they're 6-12 without him or 6-11, you know, he missed a game since he got back. I think he lost some faith in them. Not that that's right, because you as the leader, you can't sulk. And if you're the best player in the world, you have to feel like I can carry these guys. So he may have to fight some of his own instincts to be the leader that they need and not sulk for these last 25 games.
And Sarah, that honestly is a little bit about what a little bit of what Scottie Pippen was talking about, where look, Scottie Pippen, some of the shots sound a little bit more personal and that he's supporting Jordan or whatever. Well, but if you talk,
Scottie got calls when he said like LeBron was ahead of Jordan and stuff like years ago.
Right. And then like, look, you got Isaiah.
The narrative
changed. Well, you got Isaiah who's on team LeBron because Jordan and him hate each other and Jordan kept him off the dream team, right? So there's some baggage there. But when you start to unpack it, this is what the guys around, this is what Kobe's people will talk about. This is what Jordan's people talk about. Like, dude, if it was Kobe, if it was Magic, if it was Jordan, they're going to fire every bullet in their gun, in their arsenal, in order to win. Whereas LeBron does have a tendency to shut it down, sometimes midseason, to get a coach fired, to get a player moved.
Think about what he did last year. I mean, I think we often overlook with the tremendous legendary playoff run we saw. He sulked all through January.
Yes.
Until we got to the trade deadline.
Yeah, he sulked, and I think he was coasting, too. Like, look, we talked about it earlier. 16th season, all those playoff games, all those Olympics. Like, he's not what he used to be. You see it mainly on the defensive end, but he has to coast to be able to be as explosive offensively. But, yeah, some of it's mental as well.
But I think Luke gets a lot of the blame, given what has happened this season undeservedly.
Luke should not be, like, the thought that he would have been fired at the trade deadline or, you know, at the All-Star break was terrible. He is being made and will be made ultimately probably the scapegoat.
Yes.
LeBron, for the front office, the young player.
Not getting enough shooting, no question.
Speaking of the offseason and what happens, we're going to move on to free agency talk. And two of the biggest targets this summer are Kyrie and KD. And rumors have it that they could join forces with the Knicks. These rumors have heated up after a behind-the-scenes video was released of them talking at the NBA All-Star game. Chris, you buying that these two will team up with the Knicks?
Yeah, but Kyrie, all, I read his lips. Video. He was like, look, Kevin Knox, Dennis Smith Jr., we in the East, we going to be nice. Boston won't be the same without me.
And he turns and winks at the camera phone. That's right in front of him.
No, but it's very realistic. Look, I'm not saying Kyrie's out of Boston, but I do think a lot of it depends on how this season ends. If they go out in the second round, and they play right now, they're scheduled to play Milwaukee, you know, assuming the top seeds win. They will play Milwaukee in the second round, and I think Milwaukee, in my book, would be favored. So if they go out in the second round, is Kyrie or the other young players going to be able to accept that, hey, we went further last year in LeBron's East, even though it's better now, the still perception is it's wide open because LeBron's gone. We went farther last year. We beat Milwaukee last year. Now we have Kyrie. We lost to them. That could push him out the door. And while there are people, I agree with you, Doug, I don't think he's going to the Lakers. But there are people in the league that think it's either the Knicks or the Lakers. I think it would definitely be the Knicks. He's from the greater New York area in West Orange, New Jersey. And I don't think KD would go to New York by himself. I don't think he should go to New York by himself. And he and Kyrie are close, as we saw, but they're close friends as well. They will be talking. And here's the scary thing. If those two want to go to New York and New York gets the first pick or maybe even the second pick, you could offer that for Anthony Davis. Obviously, with Kyrie and KD, your timetable changes. You don't necessarily want to wait on a Zion Williamson to develop or whatever you think he needs to do. Maybe you just go get Anthony Davis, and you talk about a big three of Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, and Anthony Davis in New York.
Money-wise, could they do that?
Oh, yeah, they could work it out. They could work it out.
You can do anything. You have to shed the rest of the team. And Dennis Smith Jr., by the way, goodbye.
You're right.
enjoy New Orleans and some beignets. Because I don't think Dennis Smith Jr. and Kyrie work together anyway. Right. I mean, truth be told. Could it happen? Yeah. But, boy, there's a lot of if ifs were fifths, we'd all be drinking, right? I mean, there's a lot that has to happen there. So it has to – those guys don't know. They don't know. One of the reasons I think Kevin Durant is a little bit tired of being asked about it is because, if honestly, he's got no idea.
Right. And like you say, both of them.
I've got no idea because I don't know how this is going to end. We all assume the Golden State Warriors are going to win the championship, but The path to getting there, what's that like? Do they actually get there? What would happen if they lost? What would happen if they win? Like, there's a lot of scenarios. And then you have Boston. Like, yeah, they could play Milwaukee, but all those teams, you know, in the middle are separated by a game. They could very easily get to the Eastern Conference Finals again and get to the NBA Finals if they figure some things out. So, and how is he motivated if they do well? How is he motivated if they do poorly? And are you betting on David Fizdale, who everybody likes and was part of those Miami championship teams, but he ain't been the head coach in winning anything, right? It was before the collapse last year in Memphis, and now this year.
He had a nice little run that one year in Memphis. With
Fizdale?
What did he say on
take that for data. Yeah, but then he also stopped getting along with Marcus Gasol, and that's why he lost his job.
Yeah, they start, season.
Right, and that's when they start. So, like, look, I like Fizz.
I think Fizz is a good coach.
Everybody thinks he's a good dude, and I think he's a pretty good coach. But you got Brad Stevens. You got like kind of bird in hand is better than one in the bush. So let's see if Brad Stevens impresses him in the postseason, where he's like, whoa. I'm in on Brad because it's, you know, playoff Brad is like playoff Flacco. It's a little bit higher level than everybody else. Anybody who says they know right now, I believe is lying. They want their opinion heard because those guys don't know. They may think it's a cool idea, but cool ideas and does it actually happen? There's a big gap between the two.
Even talk around the league. You talk to GMs and executives for other teams, they're speculating because nobody knows for sure what these guys are going to do. And as much as I said yesterday, I would love to see KD try to win four straight in Golden State, assuming they win this year, and then go to New York or something. But four straight is tough. There's a reason nobody's done it since Bill Russell, because not only the physical challenge of doing it, but mentally, the fatigue. And we've already seen tension between KD and Draymond Green. Like, does this group even want to come back together for a fourth run at a title? I don't know. So I think, though, Doug, I think I'm a little more, I guess, optimistic would be the word, that Kyrie and KD do end up in New York than you are.
I think it's also interesting that there was a story about the possibility of Jim Dolan selling the Knicks, which he shot down. Right. Because there is some feeling still in the NBA, even though he has nothing to do with basketball, right? One of the things he did a couple years ago was like, that's the mistake with Phil Jackson, when he's like, I'm hiring the best, let them run it. And Phil Jackson ran it into the ground yet again. Right. But Jim Dolan has nothing to do with basketball, but he did he got into it with Charles Oakley, and that was ugly. And I think there is that sense where, do I want to go play and make Jim Dolan some more money, or do I not? The other part that I think is interesting is I'm not sure I would trade Zion Williamson for Anthony Davis.
Really?
I mean, look.
If you had those two?
I have those two.
Oh.
Because Zion Williamson.
Because I wouldn't do it if I didn't. If I don't get a free agent, I'm not trading Zion for Anthony Davis.
Obviously not. No question. He's a meal ticket. You know, they put $1 billion into that arena, and he's going to fill it every night. But if you think of who he really is, he's not LeBron James. What he is if you took Draymond Green and you gave him the athleticism of Blake Griffin early in his career, and then you gave him a little bit of Charles Barkley in his ability to kind of score in and around the post, and a little bit of LeBron's kind of some of his ball handling, but he's not LeBron
that's
James.
A great player.
LeBron James. That's what he could be.
No question.
In 2019 into 2020 and beyond, NBA basketball has changed. If you go back 10 years ago, 15 years ago, he would have had to go down a position. He would have had to be a 3 in the NBA. He's a 4-5. He's Draymond. He'll play 5 when you play small ball. He'll play 4 with your starting lineup. And to me, in addition to the fact that he's a highlight film and he plays both ends of the floor, don't get me wrong, Anthony Davis is a better player right now, but in terms of fit for those guys, you don't need anybody else who needs the basketball. Those two guys, you play with one ball, it's going to be I go, you go. And he already plays without the basketball with Duke. That's the great part about it. He doesn't have to relearn how to play off the ball. That's how he plays now. He'd be perfect with those two. Plus, he'd fill up the arena. Plus, he'd help you at the defensive end. I wouldn't trade the rights to Zion Williamson for Anthony Davis.
I would. I mean, look, you make a good point. Those are solid points, and Zion could win with those two. So maybe they wouldn't do it, but Man, Anthony Davis is only 25 himself.
I know, it's amazing.
You know, and
you already know what you're getting.
No, I know.
Right, you know, yeah, because as much as I like Zion and you like him, and I haven't talked to one person in the NBA who hasn't said he's the consensus number one pick, we still don't know for certain.
Yeah, we don't know if he can lose weight. We don't know how much he can play at that weight. We don't know what it looks like in the NBA range. No, it's all fair.
Kyrie grew up a Nets fan. Why didn't no one want to talk about these two coming to Brooklyn?
You know,
come on.
I'll throw this out.
Give Brooklyn a little love. They could clear two max spots.
Stop it.
Obviously, he's better than their guards, but they do have guard. Like, they, you know, they would take Kyrie, obviously, over those guys. He could beat them out. But if I'm looking at that team as a free agent, I'm like, do I want to go there as a guard? You know, we need other pieces. I'm sorry about that. But
no, don't be sorry.
They're playing every great season.
I like Spencer Dinwiddie.
We'll keep going. Coming up, could LeBron's injury keep the Lakers out of the playoffs? That's ahead on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Denny Hamlin won his second Daytona 500 on Sunday, becoming just the 12th driver in NASCAR history to win it twice. And he joins us now. Denny, thank you so much for coming to the studio. We certainly appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
Great to see you.
Well, forget to talk about the race. you had a league basketball game. You have a NASCAR league that you have at your house. First of all, that's a baller thing to say. Like, I got a basketball league at my house. Okay. But after winning the Daytona 500, you dropped 31 last night?
Yeah, it was a good night. Well, the first thing I did is pull up from about 32 feet. It was 5 seconds into the game to see if I was still hot. And I was still
hot.
You were. Yeah.
So you hit a Steph Curry three to start?
Yeah.
So call him out right now and ask you who was guarding you last night or who was trying to guard you last night.
Michael Fowler. He works for Joey Logano, so he got roasted.
That is fantastic.
So you are a Jordan brand driver. Have you Michael personally. Yep. Have you ever played with him?
I've not played basketball with him. I've played quite a bit of golf with him, and everyone knows Jordan's golf story. So, yeah, he's a competitive guy and a great friend. He actually brought his family down to Homestead, Miami just 4 years ago. Brought them all down, stood in my pit box, hung out with me the entire day, kind of rooting on his friend for the championship. So it's just it's amazing.
In your phone, is it Michael Jordan, MJ?
MJ.
MJ?
Yeah.
That's kind of like when you get a text, do you show people like, see?
I mean, sometimes, but I mean, because it's, I mean, he's
MJ's
just,
showing
it's
that he has Denny Hamlin's number.
I know now. He's like, he's won the Daytona 500 two times. He's my friend.
The guy got my phone number at a Hornets basketball game, and he's texting me throughout the entire game, and I just don't understand what's going on here.
So do you know if Kemba's resigning? Do you know that for us?
Unlikely.
Oh.
Yeah,
see, breaking news.
Take that to the bank.
I know. I wish we could talk about basketball this whole time, but we are going to get to your win. The second time you won the Daytona 500, what was that like for you?
It's crazy. It you know, somewhat validates the first, I guess. I mean, there's been a lot of great drivers that have won it just one time, but you know, you look at the list it's got too. It's amazing, and it just means that you put yourself in position consistently to win it. And it was a great feeling for us, my entire team. We kind of have a new revamped team this year in a lot of different areas, so certainly happy about all that.
And Kyle and Eric finished 2 and 3, too. I mean, that's an amazing day. That's an amazing day.
Yeah, especially for Joe Gibbs Racing. I mean, I've been with this organization my entire career, 14 years now. To have a 1-2-3 finish for a very emotional weekend for Joe Gibbs, it was pretty special.
Can you talk to us about that with JD, the loss of JD, and just the significance that he meant to you, to your racing career, and just to Joe Gibbs Racing?
Yeah, it was so tough. I mean, we lost JD, you know, about a month ago or so, you know, to some brain illness. But Joe has just been one of those family businesses that he brought me on. JD actually was the one that found me at a local short track and told his dad that they needed to sign me. And, you know, he was my point of contact. When Joe went back and coached for the second stint at the Redskins, he was the guy running the race team. So, you know, it was a tough month, you know, having his funeral and everything. And then we get to the racetrack, and they have a tribute for him on lap 11. And I'm driving JD's car. JD was my car owner. It was his number. I put JD's name over my door because my initials are James Dennis, and so I go ahead and I put JD's signature up there. So it was very special to win on a special weekend for him.
How different was winning this year than when you first won it in 2016?
You know, this time it was just so slow. Everything happened so slow. The first time, you know, we're in the midst of a long green flag run, so the laps are just clicking off. You know, 3 to go, 2 to go, 1 to go, it's over. and we win in a, photo finish, closest finish in history of the race. And then this year, there's massive wrecks, with 10 laps to go. We red flag it, so I'm sitting in the car and I'm kind of, I know in my mind what playbook, what I need to do to win this race. Now, things aren't always going to work out the way you think, and the cars aren't going to be the way you think they need to be, but I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, all right, just as long as I do this, I'll be fine. Another wreck happens, another red flag. We stop again. I'm thinking more a little bit about it. So everything's just happened a little bit slower so I could take it all in.
It's a little bit like freezing the kicker, right? I mean obviously there's cars there. What was that? Because that wreck, and part of it was our Fox crew did an amazing job capturing it. But you're in front of it. It's behind you. Yeah. Do you feel that? Do you sense that? Or do you have to be told that?
Well, it's interesting. We drive from behind us. The drafts that we get, so everyone's running wide open. So everyone's got the gas all the way down, not touching the brake. So whoever's in front's the one manipulating the air the best. So we get our runs from behind us. So I'm always looking behind me to put myself in the right position to go forward. So I see the wrecks happening as it's going on, and I just know that I need to be in the top three or four positions to avoid those wrecks, and it seems like I was always one or two spots ahead of it.
You mentioned the playbook. So what is the playbook? Like, what is it? So you're sitting there. There's 10 laps to go. What's the playbook?
My playbook.
Because you won there 9 times at the same racetrack.
Yeah, it's amazing. But I knew that I wanted the top lane on the restart. And when we had that option to take the top, I knew it because I'd failed the year before. I was on the bot. I chose the bottom lane on the final restart, and I lost the race to Austin Dillon. So it took me losing a couple times to start to write a journal of, okay, this is what my book says. No matter what, no matter who's behind you, I need to take the top line, and it was successful.
We talk basketball. Can we talk football? You're a
Absolutely.
Washington fan?
Yes.
Is that because of your relationship with the Gators?
It is not. I grew up in Virginia. So, oddly enough, 12 years old, I'm in an autographed line. I got my 1992 Super Bowl hat. I get Joe to sign it. And I tell him at the time, hey, I want to drive for you one day. And, of course, I'm just some kid in line. It's the, pat on the shoulder, kick in the rear. He's like, take a picture. Okay, next. Right. But that picture's in his office now. 12 years later, he signed me and been winning races.
What was the dirt track that J.D. found you?
I was at Hickory Motor Speedway, and I was just there. Reggie White was starting a diversity program with Joe Gibbs Racing. So I was there just breaking in the cars. They were buying my late model equipment. So they came up, and J.D. was like, wow, I know we're not looking for him, but he's pretty good. And so they signed me, and it took off from there.
Okay, so we heard about your hoops game last night. After the win, Steak and Shake?
Yeah, Joe started that in 1993 after his first Daytona 500. They won. They took the trophy, and back then he says he couldn't find Victory Lane. So he just grabbed the trophy and went to Steak and Shake with it. And they didn't have to do media and stuff back then. And so he says he in 2016 did the same thing. Of course, he did the media first, but then went to Steak and Shake, enjoyed it. And you can see him there, heading up there. And I joined him, and the pit crew enjoyed it.
What's your
well.
Order? Did you?
I was
the fries,
after
the
a race. I had
there?
Quite
no.
the appetite after the race. I mean, we lose, between 8 and 13 pounds, to kind of depending on the race. I was hungry, so I blew it out. I had a grilled cheese and I had a Reese cup shake. I felt terrible for the next day, for sure.
You dropped 31. You dropped 31 the next day in your league game. Yeah, I was terrible. I would have had 40 if not for that shake.
Any dunks?
No. If you can dunk, I'm not sure we're going to let you in.
I think we'll all be fine. You still can't dunk, though, right?
No.
I used to be able to dunk, but I'm old now.
I'm not sure I buy that.
Well, I had to get video.
Denny used to be able to dunk.
Denny used to be able to dunk.
Yeah.
Denny, thank you so much for coming.
Shoot, I might be taking my son to the table.
Congratulations. Careful. These two are going to try and get in on
your schedule. Went from 30 feet, first touch.
All right, we've got much more First Things First coming up right after this. Welcome back to First Things First. Yahoo NBA senior writer Vincent Goodwill joins us. Vince, good to see you.
Hey, great
Thanks
to be here,
for
guys.
Being here. We're fellow Midwesterners.
Yeah,
Detroit.
All of us. The three of us. Yes.
Well, Chris, you're from everywhere.
I'm from everywhere, though. But mainly the Midwest. You were born in Milwaukee?
Yeah.
All right.
Were you really?
Yeah.
You mean Wikipedia?
Glad to have you. Bring up all of our birthplaces. Much has been made of the relationship between Luke Walton and LeBron James. Amid reports, James's associates haven't been happy with Walton as the head coach. But Luke told TMZ, quote, LeBron and I get along just fine. Vince, do you believe Luke Walton?
I'm sure Luke believes he gets along with LeBron James, but, I mean, Chris, you've known this from covering LeBron his whole career and covering great players. They challenge their coaches, from Michael to Magic to Isaiah, Larry Bird, all these guys. They challenge their coaches to make them better. And I think Luke is in this terrible position where the team that he came in to coach is not the team that he's coaching. The level of expectations, whenever LeBron comes in at this advanced stage of his career, the expectations ratchet up, and they ratchet up quicker, and there's no more margin for error. And when also, when a great player is no longer ascending, I think that is the toughest point to coach a great player, when his game can no longer overcompensate for where the coach lacks things. And I think that's where Luke is going to basically bear the unfair brunt of all this, probably at the end of the season.
So you're saying LeBron is not the same?
I'm saying that. I'm saying we've seen the best of him.
He is on. LeBron James is on the decline.
Yes, a very slow.
He could be plateauing.
Put it like this: Halle Berry's on the decline, but she's still bad. You know, like we're splitting hairs here at this point.
No, but you're right. Jeff Van Gundy used to always say, or still probably does, the toughest time to coach a player is when it's a superstar in decline. Now, I don't think LeBron is. He's not the same. Defensively, he's right. Not what he used to be. And even last year, when everybody was talking about, is this LeBron's best season? Because offensively, his numbers were through the roof. It wasn't his best season because defensively, he was not the same player. I mean, he used to wreak havoc on the court defensively as well as offensively. So you're right. And you're right about Luke. Look, I do think their interpersonal relationship is fine because, as the reports are saying, LeBron's associates, that's how the team knows what LeBron is thinking, is what guys that work with him are saying. LeBron's not going up to the front right. office, hey, this, this, and that. So I'm sure his personal relationship with Luke is fine, but, you know, I'm glad Luke's getting this chance to finish up the season. I don't think he'll be there next year unless they make some great postseason run, but I'm glad he's getting this full 82.
But Vince, to your point, it's a really good one. Not only is it not the job he was hired necessarily to do, it's not the team, it's not the management team. Like, he's gonna catch all the heat for LeBron's been hurt, Kuz was hurt, Rondo's been hurt twice, Zoe's been hurt twice, right?
He didn't put together this roster.
And then the roster is flawed in its composition, right? Like,
yeah.
there's a reason they got rid of Michael Beasley, but there's a reason Michael Beasley was in China, you know, a couple years ago.
Right.
And Lance Stevenson's been on so many different teams. And everyone knew, anyone could look at this roster and say, boy, you're kind of missing the shooting thing, right? Like, to play with LeBron, right. You need shooters. To play in 2019, you need shooters. And yet they didn't do it, and yet he's going to catch
Here's what it is. I think the worst thing for them was starting off fourth in the West. Like, right when LeBron got hurt, 20-9, fourth in the West, yep. Beating up Golden State on Christmas Day, then LeBron gets hurt. That ratcheted up the level of expectations again for this young team. Maybe Ball is ready. Maybe Kuzma is ready to be that second guy. And then all of a sudden, they have that terrible, 6-12 stretch or 6-11 stretch without LeBron. And all of a sudden, people are looking at Luke real funny in the light. And then we see LeBron doing these sort of sly things. Let me go stand next to Rob Pelinka and Magic Johnson in the tunnel while we're losing a game. And it gives off the appearance that LeBron is management, which to some degree he is, and great players are going to be part of management. So I wonder about that.
Do you think, and Doug brought this up earlier in the show, when LeBron was in Miami and he at first was feeling out Eric Spoelstra, Pat Riley was very definitive in saying, I'm not about to come back and coach. Eric Spoelstra is our head coach. You need to respect him. Do you think it makes a difference to LeBron, to his relationship, his perception of Luke Walton, that he was not hired by Magic and Rob, and that they have not come forth and really solidified their belief in him?
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at it, Magic Johnson was at his door at 11:59. And you can't tell me that they didn't have a soup-to-nuts conversation about every facet of this organization, from the personnel to the coaching staff to the front office structure. LeBron, his talent demands that level of information that you're going to get if he's going to sign with you. And sign with you for 4 years, which gives you a chance to hire and fire coaches, to bring in players on short or long-term contracts because you have the security of him being there. So, yeah, you know that Luke Walton was a topic of conversation. And I think Luke being in Golden State gave at least Magic and Pelinka a feeling that at least he could keep this thing sort of steady and level until they figured something out. Whether it's Brian Shaw or Jason Kidd or Mark Jackson or whoever it is, I think LeBron has reached this stage of his career now where he needs a coach whose stature sort of matches his.
Yeah, he needs a coach he respects. I mean, that's the bottom line. He's your best player. He's going to set the tone. He's got to respect the guy. He likes ex-players, and Luke's an ex-player, but he wasn't that
dog. Different. It's different.
Right, like Ty Lue and Jay Kidd and guys like that.
I agree with, you know, the hard thing in the NBA is in order to own a room, own a locker room, you got to win a championship. But in order to win a championship, you have to own a room, right? It's a vicious cycle. Right. But you mean tell me that Mark Jackson, who can't get a job in this league because nobody thinks he's a particularly good guy to work with, when he's a commentator, it's different. Right. Those guys get that big chair, and all of a sudden things change. You mean tell me like Mark Jackson or Jason Kidd, guys that have been fired elsewhere and been replaced by people who have done better than they have, that they command more respect from LeBron James' eyes than Luke Walton?
Yeah.
That makes no sense.
Why not?
Because they haven't been good coaches.
Great players. Mark Jackson was a good coach. Good coach. I'm not saying he was great. He put the defensive philosophy in there at Golden State. They would still to this day credit him for that. Now, offensively, they were different, but they still were winning 50 games. And
the second he walked out the door, they became a championship.
No. So Steve Kerr is great. I'm giving you that. But Steve Kerr put in that perfect offense. But Mark did a great job with that team.
Yeah.
Or a good job with that team.
They were
a second-round playoff team.
With Mark, it was that no one in the organization liked him. Some of the players liked him.
I agree with you. And the offense. But defensively, he did a good job with that team.
Yeah, because they were awful before.
He gave Steph and Clay, you know, confidence in this league. I think Mark did a good job.
But, I mean, there's a reason that Mark hasn't been hired by other
it's
people.
It's what you said.
And then Jason Kidd's gotten multiple opportunities, and I keep hearing Jason Kidd. Like, right.
I'm telling you,
I'm not saying that you're wrong. You're right. But it's like, wait, there has to be somebody out there who's won something that commands LeBron's respect that makes sense, because none of these names jump out at me like, well, he's definitely better.
That's only five or six good coaches in the league anyway. And then there's five or six really good coaches.
Difference.
Five or six bad coaches and a bunch of dudes in the middle, and these dudes in the middle need a great player. And Eric Spoelstra was just a guy until 2012, and then he got made, and then he was respected, and now he's one of the good coaches in the league. A lot of times for these coaches, it takes that second job, that third job, to figure out how to navigate
the
interpersonal relationships.
But the good one, though, is that you have to have somebody who management has their back, so that when LeBron James does push, you push back and says,
he's our guy. So, yeah, you should be able to
be here.
We're going to hear from you a little later in the show, Vince. Don't go anywhere. Coming up, where could Antonio Brown end up next season? That's next on First Things First. This Saturday, the WBC Super Middleweight title is on the line on FS1. Coverage starts at 10 p.m. Eastern on FS1 and the Fox Sports app. We'll get to Antonio Brown in a second, but first, college basketball, Wisconsin, Illinois, Khalil Iverson runs the floor.
I like that.
Put back.
You don't usually see that from
some
Wisconsin.
Power.
Yeah. Power, a little style, hanging on the rim.
Come on, man. Sam Pepper used to throw down a little bit.
I know Sam Pepper's upset now.
I'm Big Ten. Next, Virginia Tech. Ahmed Hill shoots the gap. Nice steal.
Not bad.
Coast to coast.
Not pictured Virginia winning.
With a flush.
Not bad.
I know. You're having issues with this.
Boring but good. Like, they're like Volvo. They're the Volvo of college basketball.
Finally, from All-Star Weekend, Jay Clark, the jumper. Some acrobatics.
Handspring?
He may have
and then
a bad
to find the basketball
is
kind of the hardest
That's
part.
That's incredible.
All right, moving on to Antonio Brown. He'll likely be on another team next season after requesting a trade from the Steelers. The Cardinals are currently the betting favorite to land the wideout. However, Brown said he would be excited about whatever team he winds up with.
I'm excited about the opportunity to just any team who show interest. I'm excited about the commitment to play football. So whatever teams give me an opportunity, I think they'll be excited about it.
Doug, will AB regret demanding a trade?
I think he will. I mean, I think a lot of people in the league see it for what it is. It's a money grab, right? There's no guaranteed money left in his deal, and he's trying to get out to hit reset on that clock and get, you know, some guaranteed money. He went on a IG Live today and said, among other things, that, hey, if you have guaranteed money and you want a wide receiver, hit me up, but don't call me AB, call me Mr. Big Chest, which means that Chris has to relent.
Big Chest.
Chris has to give back his nickname, because I don't know if you know, but Chris told me this morning, call me Mr. Big Chest. I was like, okay, now Antonio Brown wants to be called
Mr. Big Chest. We're halfway through the show, and you can no longer tell us that early on?
Can't give yourself a nickname, and then you give Mr. Big right. Chest.
That's what he should regret, that tweet or that Instagram post or whatever.
IG, probably a lot of tweets. And you're saying
the team if you have money. So you're letting them know, like you said, they probably see through it anyway. But now, in addition to all the other problems, Ben Roethlisberger and his problems with, you know, the franchise in Pittsburgh, now you're throwing that money, big money for a 31-year-old. He will be 31, who has had some issues with discipline and also has these legal issues that could pop up. Look, it really depends on where he goes. If he goes to, we always bring up Buffalo or some other team with a bad quarterback, he will definitely regret it. Because also, in addition to not having a good quarterback, if he's out of the spotlight, that's going to hurt him too. Because he in Pittsburgh, you're one of the top teams in the AFC generally. You're a big story. And all your antics, he clearly likes attention. So you get that in Pittsburgh. If he goes somewhere where they're a bad team, they don't have a good quarterback, he's not putting up the numbers, he's going to be miserable on the field and also off of it because he's not getting the attention he desires. Now, if he goes somewhere else, you know, I don't think New England, I don't think they would trade him there. Cleveland, I don't think they'd trade him in the division. Baltimore, would they even send him in the division? But that wouldn't be a great place for a wide receiver.
Send him to Baltimore and get four balls
right.
a game.
So,
see how happy he is.
We keep talking about the Cardinals. Would that be a good fit for him?
I mean, they'd have embarrassment of riches in terms of skill position players. David Johnson and Christian Kirk and Larry Fitzgerald in the slot and him. Yeah, but who's your quarterback? And you have to rebuild an offensive line. He wants money. So I don't know what the good options are for him. I just know that.
I think San Francisco is a good option.
Well, for him, like, he'd like to go to San Francisco. But does San Francisco, they already are paying a huge percentage of their cap to Jimmy Garoppolo, who has, you know, yet to stay healthy for an entire season. And he's
going to need somebody to throw the ball to, though.
He does need a star wide receiver outside the numbers. There's no question. But do they want to go that deep in financially to get an Antonio Brown? And I don't know what the answer to that is. I can only tell you, though, that here's a guy who is incredibly talented, but I don't know what makes you think that he wants attention. Was it the Rolls Royce, the haircut,
the helicopter,
the helicopter, the fur coat, or all the
nickname,
or the Facebook, or Facebook Live in the locker room, or the IG? I don't know what makes you think that. I think that's a big leap that you just took. It's interesting because he's working against a market that seems to be going through a bit of a market correction. Right, I know that Sammy Watkins, a lot of this was Sammy Watkins got overpaid by the Kansas City Chiefs last year, right? And they're like, man, if Sammy Watkins, who can't stay healthy, can get $16 million, what should Antonio Brown be worth? And that's generally the way it's worked, is money on top of money. But we did see the Patriots win without anybody good outside the numbers, without a huge investment into it. And the top-paid wide receivers didn't crack the playoffs this year. So as much as he is an immense talent, and we saw Dez Bryant's body break down at the same age, only one game back, or didn't even play one game with the New Orleans Saints. So there's some things working against Antonio Brown. But the biggest thing working against Antonio Brown is Antonio Brown. Stop tweeting. Stop posting. Stop doing. We realize you want out of Pittsburgh. Meet with management. Ask to be traded. Find a new home. And then you negotiate a new contract.
From one wide receiver to another, coming up are the Giants trying to trade Odell Beckham Jr. That is next. And first things first. The NASCAR season heats up Sunday in Atlanta with the Folds of Honor Quick Trip 500. It all starts at 2 p.m. Eastern on Fox. And time for us to go viral. MVP frontrunner Nikita Kucherov continued his prolific run with 5 points last night. But the real action happened off the ice with NHL analyst Pierre Maguire almost getting hit with an Aaron puck in his famous inside the glass position.
Wow. Ooh.
Watch out, Pierre. Look at that.
Whoa.
It's like lessening it.
Oh, sorry there.
I don't even know if you saw it come. Like, can you
tell? No, because he's not even moving.
No, look, the reaction is a little late.
Yeah, I don't know what he was watching.
Wow.
That would have caught him right in the eye.
Yeah, it would have been bad.
It could have been ugly.
Yeah.
Whew.
Be careful.
Cool shot,
there.
Though, right?
Yeah, time for some stories to start your morning. Lincoln Riley had high praise for his former quarterback, saying Kyler Murray has kind of a Barry Sanders effect. Doug, is this fair praise?
I actually think there's some parallels there. Obviously, Barry Sanders, Oklahoma State, whereas Kyler Murray's Oklahoma, but both were really backups, only started 1 year. Kyler started a little bit at A&M. But there's this lack of size, and you can't see him, and then you can't catch him, and you think you have him, and he's elusive, and yeah, it kind of makes sense. Look, I've had an NFL GM tell me that the best combination would be if you said Doug Flutie with Mike Vick's athleticism. But if you want to say a Barry Sanders quality to him, I'm okay with that because you're talking about football royalty.
Yeah, and Lincoln Riley was talking about his elusiveness, his ability to avoid the huge hit. And that'll be big for him. He's obviously going to run some in the NFL. And when he doesn't get down, he needs to learn how to slide for sure, get out of bounds for sure. But when he does get hit, if he can slide with it, roll with the hit, and he has that skill as Riley's talking about, that'll serve him well.
I think there is one point that should be made that hasn't been made yet, and I think will once we get close to the draft. Yes, the numbers are better than Baker Mayfield. He may have better raw talent than Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield did have a leadership quality and a verbal quality that I don't know if Kyler has.
Slide with it, roll with it. Sounds like
That's
a song
right.
or a dance. The NFL, Matt LaFleur has a big task ahead of him, bonding with quarterback Aaron Rodgers. The Packers coach reportedly plans to hit Rodgers from all angles this offseason. Chris, how much pressure is on Aaron Rodgers after a tumultuous 2018?
He received more criticism this last season than he ever has, you know, and people are starting to look at it, especially as Tom Brady continues to rack up these Super Bowl appearances and wins. People are now starting to look at Aaron Rodgers and, were we premature in saying he's the best passer of the football we've ever seen? Why doesn't he win more? Last year, they didn't even make the playoffs. His numbers were down. We're starting to see, you know, Patrick Mahomes and other guys put up prolific numbers, and Aaron didn't, at least last season. So, yeah, there's a lot of pressure. I think Matt LaFleur, if he's, like, hitting with all angles, as he said, if he can impress Rodgers with his schemes and his game planning and what he wants to do, his play calls, I think Aaron will buy in because he was longing for some of that with Mike McCarthy. He didn't feel like he was getting it. So if LaFleur impresses him, I think Aaron will be all in.
I think they have the running back that they've wanted with Aaron Jones. Devontae Adams, I think, could be an elite wide receiver. They had a lot of youth kind of at some of the other wide receiving positions for much of last season because of injury. And you know, doesn't Matt LaFleur know Sean McVay? I mean, doesn't that automatically make him? He's automatically right. make him a genius.
You think that's what Rodgers is expecting? That type
no,
of
I do. Look, there's a balance there because you can't simply hire a coach simply to impress and to fix the quarterback because the rest of the team sees that and feels that. So there's a lot of juggling that has to be done. But I think Green Bay is closer to being in the playoffs than they are to being a disaster. I still think Aaron Rodgers, the best thrower of a football we've ever seen.
Moving on to Odell Beckham, reports are that the Giants were aggressively shopping him last offseason. That was until the Patriots came calling, and then they pulled their star wideout off the market. Remember, the Giants signed Odell to a 5-year extension last summer. Chris, would Odell have worked out with the Patriots?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I would love to see Tom Brady with an elite wide receiver. I remember starting to begin to think, Tom Brady could be in the GOAT conversation when he first started playing with Randy Moss because we had never really seen him with that type of receiver. And once he got him, you know, he threw 50 touchdowns. He put on a light show. So I would love to see him with OBJ. Would it work for 6 years? I don't know. Randy Moss he was there for three, worked for about a year and a half, 2 years. I think an OBJ in New England, or maybe if they go for Antonio Brown or whatever, if they get that type of receiver, I think they could win another Super Bowl. Now, obviously, they can win one anyway. You don't write them off. But I felt like there was a sense of finality to this past Super Bowl. Maybe that's just me. I picked them to win it. They did win it. But now I kind of feel like, okay, it's probably done. But if you get that type of receiver with Tom Brady, it's not done.
Yeah, I'm not going to be the guy that calls it, right? Like, you don't want to be the one that calls time of death. And when all of a sudden, they're back.
Parker.
Because they've been back so many times. Look, we have to take into context the timing of when New England apparently called, right? This is last offseason when there was all the talk that ownership had had enough. There was the video of him in the hotel room with a woman would look like cocaine, felt like cocaine, don't know if it was cocaine. And ultimately, he was on good behavior. They gave him a new contract. But it would have been like a Brandon Cooks type deal where they knew that Brandon Cooks wanted to get paid. They had him for 1 year, and then they flipped him to the Rams, or could have let him walk, or could have franchised him. We don't know. And I'm guessing that the Giants are like, wait, these guys are the best on the waiver wire of anybody in the history of the NFL. Why we let him go? It doesn't mean that they had to sign him to a huge contract, though, which only empowered him to be more like he's been. It made no sense. And then when I read Jay Glazer making a bold prediction kind of out of nowhere that, hey, Odell Beckham Jr. is traded, that's my bold prediction, I think Jay Glazer knows 15 times more than he ever lets on. When he lets that out of the bag, it's probably going to happen because it's a little bit like divorce, right? Last year, they went to the divorce attorney, and maybe they went to therapy. But there's a reason they went to the divorce attorney to begin with. Ultimately, they can't make it work out. He can't function within the bright lights and big city of New York and within the organization based upon how it's structured. They probably had enough if Jay Glazer puts it out.
Well, like you said, look, we don't know what Jay knows. Maybe there's all types of chaos going on behind the scenes, in the locker room, whatever. But from what we've seen, what I've seen, I know he had the Lil Wayne interview. You brought up earlier, you know, making a business decision on the onside kick. Yeah. Which is not good, but I haven't seen enough where I would trade him. Now, again, I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but publicly, I have not seen enough. I look at OBJ as one of the top receivers in the league. I look at the Giants' main problem is they don't have a quarterback. Eli's been great. He probably will be a Hall of Famer. I think he should. But now he's 38 years old. He's not the same. He can't utilize OBJ to the degree that he needs to be utilized. And with OBJ, Evan Ingram at tight end, and Saquon Barkley at running back, if you get a capable quarterback in there, I think this team, at least at the skill positions, would be just about as good as anything out there. So that would be my focus on replacing Eli. Even if Eli starts this year. Like, if you bring in Dwayne Haskins, you can groom him under Eli. But they have to be focused on getting another quarterback who can utilize some of the skill position players that they have.
Would you try to move him if you're the Giants? Are you trying to trade him?
There's a major – it's like the Antonio Brown thing, only worse, because they're just starting this contract. Now, they haven't paid any of a lot of the big money from the contract because it was an extension on the deal, which ends at the end of this year. So it would depend on the finances, depend on what you get back in return, but – There's been this movement in the NFL for the last couple of years. It's not just the Patriots. The Dolphins, we had Mike Tannenbaum out here, and I know he lost his job as general manager, but he was with us yesterday. What did they do last offseason? They got rid of Jarvis Landry. He goes to Cleveland. And they get rid of Ndamukong Suh, who walks as a free agent to the Rams. And if Ryan Tannehill is healthy, they probably make the playoffs, and he probably still has his job. You pick culture and character over talent. Now, you can't have no talent at all, but – and you can also – the salary cap works. You got to spread that money around. So if I had a plan in place, I don't see why not, because you're going to win if you can fix the offensive line, if you can fix the defense, and if you can get the future as a quarterback. If you can get a first-round draft pick for him and you can draft Dwayne Haskins with it and then continue to fix your offensive line, your other issues, I would definitely consider it. I wouldn't give him away, and I would see how we can work with him in the future because he is an immense talent, but – he only played 12 games this year, only played 4 games the year before. So forget about what he does off the field and with all the antics or on the field with the antics. Is he ever going to be healthy for an entire season? The answer has only been yes 1 year.
When you look at him and what the Giants have done with him, and I know you talked about we're not in the organization, you don't see it on a day-to-day basis. Do you feel like New York has done enough, though, for him and to help him reach the potential that he can achieve both on the field but also some of the off-the-field stuff as well?
Well, certainly not on the field. And you're right, he's been injured, so there's no doubt about that. But I believe as great as Saquon Barkley was last year and is going forward, quarterback is just a much more important position than running back. You had this quarterback draft that we had a lot of quarterbacks people loved. They should have drafted one. I think it should have been Sam Darnold at that point. And that would have been – Eli maybe would have started last year and maybe finished the whole season. But going forward, you would have had a quarterback who could get the ball to OBJ. And I think that would have made him happier too. So in that regard, no. Off the field, look, these guys are adults. They're going to do what they want to do. If he chooses to make bad decisions, that's on him. I'm not going to blame the organization. They can only do so much to, you know, keep him in check, if you will. But any personal decisions he makes that are bad, whether it's social media, whether it's who he's hanging out with and what he's doing in these hotel rooms or whatever, that's on him.
Yeah, but, I mean, like, look, I will blame the organization from this standpoint. One, you started with the what they did in the draft. They could have killed the Jets, and instead they granted the Jets new life, and now they made themselves in a precarious position hoping for Dwayne Haskins or some quarterback at a draft spot in a year in which those quarterbacks are probably overvalued because there's fewer of them in this draft. And then, of course, they gave Odell Beckham Jr. this new contract. Remember, they also, let's move Eric Flowers over to the right side. That'll hide him. Did that work this year? The answer is no. So Dave Gettleman, taking over this job, thought he had all the answers, and he's had plenty of missteps. Is Saquon Barkley a good player? Sure. But we've seen guys lead the league in rushing as third and fourth round draft picks and doing it by committee. They should have a quarterback by now. They should have fixed their offensive line, and they didn't have to sign him to that long-term contract. When they did, they made all three of those mistakes.
All right, coming up, back to the NBA. Could KD and Kyrie already be planning to join forces? That's next on First Things First. Here on First Things First with Vincent Goodwill, two of the biggest possible free agents this offseason are Kyrie and KD. And rumors have it they could join forces with the Knicks. These rumors have heated up after a behind-the-scenes video was released of them talking at the All-Star game. Vince, are you buying that these two could team up this offseason?
Could. It's always possible, right? Like, they have cap space. You know, KD and Kyrie are close. And look, if they're going to have conversations about playing for the Knicks or playing together anywhere, it's not going to be in the sight of all the NBA cameras
well,
in the
see,
back hallway of All-Star.
I read the lips, Vince. It was like, look, Fizdale can coach. Kyrie was saying, Kevin Knox,
I know,
Fizdale
this is the
can
setup.
Coach. Look. Madison Square Garden. That's what they were talking about.
They saw
okay,
him.
So you mean to tell me, like you are literally stoking the flames of every desperate Knicks fan right now. But, no, I do think it's possible. It's something. Chris, you hear like I hear. You hear stuff through the back channels for months now that this is what the Knicks have been gearing up to do. Not that they've gotten assurances or anything like that, but this is something that they know is a possibility. If Boston comes with a five-year, 188 deal for Kyrie Irving and they land Anthony Davis, do you see him leaving that to come play for the Knicks who are in the sort of infancy stages of contention? I don't know if I see that, but I do think it's possible.
How much do you think is contingent upon what happens this postseason?
Well,
with Kyrie, with both of these guys. But first, look at Kyrie. What Boston does during this playoff run, how much do you think that weighs into what he will decide for this next year?
I think it weighs into the point that if he's healthy and they go to the finals, that means, and he's that guy, that gives Boston every reason to offer him the full boat. If he gets hurt, or if he's not as effective, or if they get bounced in the second round, because at times this year they have looked like that type of team, then it sort of gives you a little more room for the Knicks to sort of come in like that. But if they go to the finals, Chris, and he's that guy, I have a hard time believing that Kyrie, with everything that he's wanted in his career, I have a hard time seeing that he's going to walk away from that.
The interesting thing is that all these guys will be talking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as you said, like, Kyrie is close with KD. Kyrie is close with Anthony Davis. So they're all going to be talking about what they want to do. And so they'll know before July 1st. They'll know before the draft,
mm-hmm.
you know, where they're leaning. They may not know what they're going to do, but they'll know where they're leaning. AD will know if Kyrie's planning on staying or if he's planning on getting out of there. And I do think it's all based on the postseason. There's not that much reason. If he's happy in Boston and with the organization, then you're right. Why would you leave?
But
even if they get beat in the conference finals. Now, I get that the young guys think they might be better without him, and he wants to go further than they did last year without him. I get all that. But I'm just saying, when you look at the organization, they know how to win. Danny Ainge is a great GM. You mentioned the Supermax they could give him that nobody else can. And then you've got
a guy who suffered a bunch of injuries.
Right, he has had a bunch of injuries. And then you got a good coach in Brad Stevens, so there's not much reason to leave.
I think that maybe the most interesting part we haven't discussed yet is these are two different dudes, right? Like, again, we all know everybody in the league, and it's a hard way. I mean, all
that's a nice way to put it.
Right? Like, yeah, you guys all cover the NBA.
Nobody knows what they're going to do.
Right, but these guys specifically, and I don't know if people understand, like, everybody kind of has their own thing, right? But there are guys that still have the ability to remain normal. I think Steph Curry still has the ability to remain normal. Wife, kids,
right.
Same guy he was when before he was a two-time MVP when he came out of Davidson.
Yep.
Not everybody's like that. And that doesn't mean they've changed and gone Hollywood. They're just different. Like Kyrie tweaks with people with the flat earth thing. That's who he is. You know, KD's the guy with the burner accounts. That's just kind of who they're just kind of different dudes where they don't travel necessarily in NBA circles when they're not in their NBA season. Is that fair? And that makes it even more difficult to pretend like we know what they're going to do because they don't know what they're going to do.
They don't. Do you think in Vince, you're now out here in the New York area. We got two L.A. guys. Do you think that the New York Knicks, Madison Square Garden, whatever you want, do you still think it has the same cachet, the same draw that it once had at this point for players of this generation?
I don't think it should because they've won, one playoff series in the last millennium, basically, since, 2000?
73 was the last champion.
Like, I don't see what players see in New York, but when they get there, they talk about it and they're genuine about it. So maybe it's the process of maybe bringing New York back and being the guy that brings the New York Knicks back to the sort of stage of prominence. Maybe that's attractive to him. But I don't see what would be the draw. Like, every free agent of note that comes through New York, they just use New York as a stage to drop 50, and they go back to where they belong. But you mentioned it before. And here's another point. Kyrie has had a lot of twists and turns through his career, but none of them have basically been his choice. The LeBron situation, that really wasn't his choice. He was playing with that team, and then LeBron showed up, and everything changed. And when he wanted to get traded, Boston was not one of those teams that he wanted to get moved to. So although it appears that Kyrie has had all these different twists and turns in his career, and they have, none of them have been by his own volition. And I wonder if he's going to take this offseason, and that's something I think will work in the Knicks' favor, that is something that could be his choice that he can put his own stamp on. And him and KD, like, I don't know if what they think are going to be consistent from Monday to Wednesday in a given week. They're just, like you said, they're just two totally different guys. So to project and say what they're going to do in July, I think that's impossible.
How well would they fit together? I mean, obviously, two of the elite players, but how well would you gauge stylistically that they actually fit together on the court?
You know how you have like this big plate of food for Thanksgiving and you like, man, I'm going to eat all of it, and then like halfway through it's like, nah, not really. I don't think they fit as well together as they think they do. Because I think
there's only one basketball. Like, last time I checked, you can't play with two basketballs.
I think their mindset is similar. Like, Kyrie is probably the greatest scorer of the basketball at his position since Isaiah Thomas, the first Isaiah Thomas.
Yes.
He's not a natural facilitator. KD kind of needs that sort of facilitating personality around him because, remember, when he played with Russell Westbrook, we always had concerns about, is KD getting the ball enough? We don't really say that now because he's playing with Stephen Curry and Draymond Green, guys who are apt to pass the ball. I don't know if Kyrie, I mean, don't get me wrong, 5 seconds left in the game, pick your poison. But for 48 minutes, I think it's a little more difficult.
It's a great point you make. It's a lot like the idea of New York, right? Where the idea of New York, when you come in and you just play one game in the Garden, you're like, this is great. This is amazing. The fans are amazing. The building's incredible. Like, we're right here in the middle of the heart. You like feel the energy of it. But if you got to do that for, 41 games in the playoffs, and you got to answer all the questions to the media, and, you can't live, like, close to the Garden. Nothing is easy in New York. That's a lot like playing with Kyrie Irving or playing with Kevin Durant, where for one game, like, Kevin Durant's basically an unstoppable offensive weapon. He's a walking bucket. He's 7 foot with a high release, and he can score and defend any position. And Kyrie Irving, I think an Isaiah Thomas reference is perfect. He can pass, but why pass when you're the best finishing guard we've seen since Rod Strickland? You know, I mean, so they have it all. But do you want to play with just because you, it feels like an all-star game competition or your friends, you want to play together, it's harder than it looks when you're so used to getting the ball at the end. Both guys used to getting the ball at the end of shot clock and making a play.
I think they could make it work.
Oh, you can make it work.
Absolutely, they can make it work.
Kyrie and LeBron.
And you can make it work in New York.
And they, and
you can make
KD
it work in New York, but it's
not nearly
easy.
As dominant, ball dominant as LeBron. And so Kyrie can play with a ball dominant guy. I wouldn't even call KD ball dominant. Now, there are times where he'll want to ISO and handle the ball, but he can play off the ball. He can catch and shoot. And Kyrie showed us, now I know it was, what, 2 weeks. He can be a big-time facilitator Absolutely. When he wants to. And I think he would also appreciate a veteran superstar as a teammate more than he did in Cleveland. I get what you're saying, but I think it would work with those two. And KD is a playmaker himself. Kyrie can play off the ball, too, and catch and shoot. So I think they can make it work.
Chris, if this happens, bottom line, they should erect a statue of Scott Perry, like, right in the right next to the Statue of Liberty. Like, if they pull this off.
That would be the best move they've done the player-wise.
Ever.
But right
ever.
Since the 70s. It
ever.
Really would.
That would be the biggest coup since Pat
From
Riley got Bosh and LeBron and got Wade to recommit all in the same summer. That would be
be huge.
It would be seismic.
And Scott Perry does have a relationship with KD.
He drafted him in Seattle.
Here with Vincent Goodwell, and we're talking LeBron. He suffered his first major injury in his career. The season, straining his groin, which sidelined him for 18 games. Since that injury, the Lakers went from 4th in the West to 10th, and now, according to reports, the team is concerned that it could keep him from leading them to the playoffs. Vince, how worried should LeBron and the Lakers be about missing the postseason?
I wouldn't say definitely worried or concerned, but, 25 games left. LeBron usually starts to put on that sort of push, but at this point, year 16, 34, a lot of miles on his body. Can he afford to do that and risk more injury at this stage of his career? So I would say they should be a little concerned, but when you got the best player in the game on your team and one of the most efficient players in the game on your team, I think they can make up 2.5 games relatively easy. The problem is that they're at that AFC, they ain't going to be in the playoffs long, and that's not going to look good for him no matter how many straight finals he's gone to, because I can't think of the time we were talking about over the break. When's the last time the best player in basketball missed the playoffs?
Yeah, Shaq, maybe Kobe.
Shaq had teams that made the playoffs, and then they were swept out of the playoffs.
But he wasn't the best player in the league at that point anymore.
There was a couple early times early in his career. Yeah. There was a couple times when you could make the argument. No, you're right. I almost ever had somebody say like, "Well, that guy." I've always thought if you accuse somebody of being on steroids and they're not, it's the ultimate compliment, right? Like you're so freakishly built that you must be. This is like the opposite of that. If you're saying, like, man, his groin must still be bad, what you're really saying is, man, LeBron James has slowed down. That's what the Lakers are telling us. And that's what we're talking about, like, during the break, which is, does he still have the ability to dial it up like he always has? Where, like, don't worry, I got this, I can carry the team. Because even early in the season, even when they were playing well and they were trending towards a top three seed, they were at the 4 seed before he got hurt, even then, it was once every couple of games where LeBron looked like LeBron. And there was other parts of the game when he was just passing, right, facilitating, and let everybody else doing kind of the dirty business. I think this is a little bit of panic, which is we knew he was eventually going to get old. We thought it might be year 3 or year 4 we were accepting of it. But year 1 and year 2, he hasn't looked nearly like we thought he would look in person.
Is there something to be said, though? I mean, he's been back 5 games. He had a groin injury, so it's not like he's able to condition it and get himself in rehab in that game type of condition. He came back in those 5 games. He's averaging 23, 11, and 11. Like, I know his movements aren't the same. I know he's not initiating some of the attack
thing.
And explosive. But don't you think that that's something that's going to come as he's trying to reintegrate himself back to actually playing games after an injury like that?
I do think it's premature to, after these 5 games, say he doesn't look like the same LeBron. Now, again, if you're saying it was happening before he got injured, that's a whole different thing. But this is too small of a sample size.
I mean, any other player on the planet, we would be like, oh, he missed 18 games. He's coming back from injury. Of course he's not going to look exactly the same. I know we're used to him being superhuman.
But he's not coming off an ACL. He's coming off a
you
groin.
You know how groins
Yeah, which
not,
you might be a little – I mean, like, maybe
those
he's hesitant. Maybe he's hesitant. But if it was still bothering him, Why did he play in the All-Star game?
Well, he's not going to be as explosive as he was at 34. Right. I mentioned it earlier. Look at the guys in his draft class. Dwayne Wade about to retire. Carmelo Anthony can't get in the league. Bosh is retired. You know, it happens. And all his extra playoff games, summer, you know, Olympic games and things like that. You're right. For Lakers fans, look, LeBron is smart. Among all his other gifts, he's very smart. He signed a four-year deal for a reason.
Absolutely.
Just in case I'm not what I used to be and I begin declining, let me get those 4 years max. So he's smart about that.
But I will say this. We have the same conversation, I feel, about LeBron and his teams the past couple of years around the All-Star break. This is a long season. It's hard to sustain that mental concentration when you don't have the physical gifts at your height to make up for that that lack, sort of, space or whatever. So I think he's going to come in the second half, 25 games left, and for a full-out sprint. The problem is the gap between he and the next best or most dependable player on the Lakers is so wide, even his greatness can't make up for that. If Kuzma or Ball or some of these other young players who've never had to play under this level of scrutiny have to perform every night between now and April, that's
but
a lot to ask.
Is that comparable
guys
to the Cleveland roster?
No, those guys were just old. That's just a difference. Like, Kevin Love, those guys were old. This is young and pressured.
I think this roster he has is better than what he had last year in Cleveland.
I agree with that.
But this is not the East. That's the problem.
I completely agree with both of what you guys said. That's one of the things we talked about in the summer, which is everybody says, I can't wait to play with LeBron. And I think the Lakers figured everybody's going to shoot a higher percentage because now you have a great passer setting you up. He commands a double team. The problem is that I'm not sure they took into account that now you're everybody else's biggest game. Now every game you go to in the NBA is not the same, right? Some games you put on cologne for, some games you don't. When LeBron comes to town, everybody's putting on cologne. It's a special night. The fans are there. It's just like Indy. Right? Indy had nothing to play for. Right. They lost their best player for the year. Devastating injury. And now they're chanting, LeBron will trade you, right? Like, everybody thinks,
you can
hey,
see
everything's
with
better with
Doug,
but
Doug, did you just say some games you put cologne on for and some games?
Doug put cologne on.
That's two Americans. Yeah, that's two Americans right there.
You put on cologne every day?
Absolutely. You don't?
No. No.
Okay, that, you must be a married man. There's two Americans or a married man.
I put on cologne.
We're not going to worry about when Doug puts on cologne.
Not every day. Special days you put on cologne. Okay. Some days you just go out. Some days you shave. Some days you don't.
This should not surprise you about Doug Fitz.
I ain't showered in weeks.
You post wax.
I tell you that.
Can you move that chair that way a little bit? Vince, you posed the question, when was the last time that the best player in the game missed out on the playoffs? If, in fact, the Lakers do miss out on the postseason, how does that impact LeBron's legacy?
That's a great question because I think his legacy, to a large degree, is set. The finals appearances mean more almost than the three championships when you think about it. When you talk about LeBron, you don't say three-time champion. You say in the current context, he's made it to the finals every year this decade except 2010. So I don't know, even if he misses the playoffs, it's a slight stain. But when you're 34 and you're 16 years, I don't think there's much he can, and he said it in Boston the day of the trade deadline, there's not much more that I can accomplish. Like, I don't think that he'll ever reach Jordan, but I think everything else sort of separates him from everybody else to that degree.
Yeah, and I think it depends on how they miss. I mean, already they're going to miss it. Like if it were the playoffs started now, they would have missed, but why? Not because LeBron James didn't play well, even if he's not what he used to be, but because he missed 18 games. So if he misses another 5 or 10 games, then I don't think it's going to be on him. If he goes all out and he's playing well, and he just can't lift this team to the playoffs, then what it could signify is the end of the LeBron James era. I mean, he'll still be, you know, a great player next year and the year after, but it could signify the end of the LeBron James era. We'll see what happens this summer.
What it will do, Sarah, it will embolden the Durants and the younger guys to say, you know what? The king is still the king, but he might be a little more Mufasa at this point. Old Mufasa, or we can get him. That's because there's a fear factor when it comes to playing against LeBron James, and maybe that eliminates if the Lakers don't make the playoffs, even if he plays well. They just say, oh, it's empty stats because you're in a stat-heavy league.
Much of a fear factor, though, as there used to be.
No.
By the way,
Mufasa.
No. From a team standpoint, no. But from a one-on-one, mano-a-mano standpoint, you're not trying to go head up with LeBron James for 48 minutes. Like, you would get embarrassed short of being Kevin Durant. That's only the only guy, I think, that can go head up with LeBron for an entire game for 2 weeks straight. Other than that.
No Kawhi?
Nah. Kawhi's good enough. He's got to be available. He's got load management to worry about.
Well, that's the thing with Kawhi.
Well, hold on. But Mufasa didn't make it till halfway through the movie. Scar was the one who they got at the end of the movie. Mufasa was the one that Scar killed Mufasa.
I'm
still tripping on you not showering and not putting on cologne.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.